Okay, well, welcome everyone to our first Q&A session for this Think Pink and Grow Rich program. Chris and I are really excited to be with you tonight. So who's going to be brave and go first? Just go ahead and hit star six.
This is Patty Cliver, and I have a big question.
Sure.
I'm a Mary Kay consultant, and one of my problems that I'm finding out is my personal life gets in the way of running my business. Just as things start going really well and I've got bookings and parties scheduled and all that kind of fun stuff, things happen that I have to take care of because I'm a POA for both my father and my aunt, both in ailing health. So how do you do that? Because then it takes 2 or 3 weeks doing what I need to do, moving my aunt, taking care of things, and I'm starting, you know, over, and I'm like, geez, it's like I didn't have anything booked. And it's very frustrating and really puts me down in the dumps at times.
I'm glad you clarified what it was you were asking about, because I was going to jokingly say in the beginning, oh, Chris and I know nothing about that, about life getting in the way of a business, because we've been kind of going through that same thing this week where we're dealing with some personal stuff, family stuff, and it has totally distracted us from business. I've missed a couple deadlines, which is really unusual for me. Chris has had a little bit of trouble focusing, so we totally get where you're coming from. So my first thought, my first thing that I thought of when you were talking about having, you know, either ailing parents or aging parents or, that you take care of, is that it really is hard to strive for perfect balance. There will be days and there will be weeks where the demands of, you know, you being a caretaker really have to come first, and other things have to be put, prioritized to a lower level. Now, and that's just life. That just tends to be the reality of a lot of where women business owners are today. Some are caring for aged parents as well as children, and they're kind of like sandwiched in the middle there and then trying to run a business on top of it. So I think a couple things. I'm going to give you some practical suggestions, and then I'm going to turn you over to Chris for the, like, mindset subconscious piece of it. Practically, the worst thing you can do when you slip back is to beat yourself up over it. So you lose a little momentum in your business, and then when you come back to it, you're so frustrated because of the lost momentum that lost momentum ends up zapping your energy even more. So it takes you longer to get back, you know, kind of into the swing of things. If we didn't beat ourselves up, if we didn't get guilty or feel bad about that, and could just come back, you know, kind of to the business with the fresh start, we'd bring a lot more energy that, you know what I mean, when we come back to it. So I think a lot of it is stop having the expectation that we're superwomen and that we can do it all and do it all perfectly, and start giving yourself a pass for being human.
Okay.
I would also tell her about buffer time. Do you think buffer time comes into play here?
Yeah, I do. When we get into, we have a call in this program on time management, and when we get into it, we talk about a concept, it's the entrepreneurial time system, and it's the concept of free focus and buffer time. Free time is when you're completely unplugged from work and you're with family and it's your downtime and you're not checking emails or phone or anything like that. Focus time is when you're completely focused on work. You know, you're in it, you're doing the revenue generating or income producing activities. You know, you're doing things that will build your business. That's focus time. Buffer time is when you're doing anything and everything else. Administrative stuff, inventory, running errands, you know, those types of things. Well, what's really important for women is to be able to shift gears, because so many women tell us, you know, when I'm with my family, I'm thinking about business, and when I'm with, you know, working my business, I'm thinking about my family. So there's always this feeling and this pull of not feeling present in either place. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, yes, right. Speaking to the choir, or the, what's the expression?
Preaching to the choir. Yeah,
preaching to the choir. So that's where the importance of buffer time comes in. So it's good that Chris brought that up. if we can, we're supposed to put buffer time in between any free and focus time, because the buffer time gives us the transition period that we need. And most women that I know go right from like their office or an appointment or business somehow and try and shift right into family mode. You know, they go from an appointment to picking up their kids with absolutely no buffer time. So I understand that time is limited for you, but even if you were able to carve out 15 minutes for yourself between the transitions, you know, and that might mean asking someone, you know, a caretaker to stay a little longer, you know, with a parent, or it might mean ending a meeting, you know, a little bit earlier so you can get a little bit of downtime just to allow yourself the transition.
You know, bring some nice music in your car if you have to. Pull over to the side of the road. Just sit, just breathe, just listen to your music. Give yourself 15 minutes. It makes such a world of difference. And as far as buffer time for myself, even as a man, I think it's more crucial for women because of how women are wired. But for me, like for Monday mornings, I typically don't schedule myself a horrific Monday morning, you know, with, you know, tons of back-to-back coaching calls and things that are, you know, heavy energy. I try to let myself break into the week with a little bit of buffer time. In other words, I might have one or two coaching calls in the morning, and then I just kind of break in, and I do things that are a little bit on the light side on Monday. So I do the same thing, and it does. It makes a world of difference. So from what I'm hearing, it sounds like you're upset because you're not getting to your to the phone to get to the booking. Isn't that true?
Correct.
So based on what we talked about yesterday, or I'm sorry, on Tuesday night, with regard to how many calls actually turns into 30 faces, do you remember what the answer was?
I wasn't able to listen to that, and I haven't had time to listen to it on the phone.
Well, so, basically what I did is I went through a formula on that, and I'm just going to duplicate it because it'll only take me a minute to do that. Basically, we know in Mary Kay that the formula for success is 30 faces in 30 days, correct?
Right.
So let's say you did a lead event. You go out, you collect, you've got a bunch of leads, and you're calling them. It's from my experience and what I've heard, about 1 in 5 of those people will say yes. Isn't that correct? About 1 in 5. Let's use an average attendance at your party or skincare class of 3. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, if 1 in 5 are, if we need 30 faces, and there's an average of 3 at each party, how many parties do we need? And we need 10, because there's 3 at each party.
Okay.
Okay. So you basically need 10, but we know in Mary Kay, about 50% of them hold, right? So
right.
How many do we really need? If we really want to have 10 hold, we need to book 20, don't we?
Yes.
All right, so what that turns into is if 1 in 5 book and we need 20 bookings, that means we need to make 100 phone calls, right? 100 phone calls.
Right.
But what you have to realize is it's 100 phone calls in 30 days. And that means it's 3.3 calls per day.
Okay.
So if you made 4 phone calls per day for 30 days, you'd likely end up with 30 faces on your calendar.
So I'm making it harder than I think it is.
Yeah.
Getting down on myself, not getting back up.
Right. What I want you to focus on is what is really 30 faces? 30 faces is 4 phone calls for you. So when you're sidetracked, what you want to focus on is, can I make 4 phone calls? And what I even broke it down further is you can simply ask yourself the question, am I good enough to make 1 phone call right now? And that's a great question to ask. Am I good enough to make 1 phone call right now?
And for you, Patty,
absolutely.
That might look
one
like,
call.
Too, if it's not fear holding you back, it might look like, am I free enough to make 1 phone call right now? So you might not be able to carve out the 2-hour time that you need. you know, to do 20 phone calls, which is sometimes our expectation. But the question you're going to want to ask is, do I have the time right now to make one phone call?
Can I make one?
And stop feeling like you have to take it in such big chunks.
Okay.
Yeah, really listen to that call, because a lot of what you're dealing with, I think, will be addressed. It's not addressed from a standpoint of time management, but from a standpoint of chunk down the tasks, focus on making one phone call, stay present. All of those things will apply to you. So I really would suggest you listen. But did this help? Did this give you some suggestions? Do you see how you're making it?
Yes.
So much, you're making it so much bigger in your mind than it actually is, and that's what we do. We blow it out of proportion.
Yes, it did help. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
So for anyone else who has a question, you can just go ahead and hit star six. So basically,
okay.
You had a communication with another consultant, and it didn't go well?
No, with a customer, actually, who happened to have been a former consultant. And what I had done was I had called another consultant, because she had actually, my customer had received a mailing from another Mary Kay consultant. And in Mary Kay, we're really big on this golden rule that we don't take customers from other customers. And I'm sure maybe Chris has dealt with the same thing. But they're very explicit about how we deal with one another. So in my personality style, I've learned that sometimes I take things black and white, maybe. How do you communicate with customers and consultants in a way that expresses your passion, expresses your honesty and integrity, without appearing pushy, aggressive, or super focused on the business and not on their needs? Does that make sense?
Well, except it's a little general for me. So I think we
okay.
need better with a specific example. And if you don't feel comfortable sharing, you know.
No, what happened was that, I'll be specific. What happened was that I came across a catalog. I was helping my girlfriend, neighbor, / customer with her recycling, found another person, found a catalog. She actually gave it to me. And on the back of the catalog, it was another consultant. So another consultant was servicing my almost 3-year customer. And I was floored. I was beyond, like, I can't believe this is happening to me. And what did I do wrong? And then what is wrong with these people? But, you know, so I guess I got myself in a big hot water, because I wanted to talk to the consultant. And instead of thinking it through and respecting, I guess, the decision that this customer had taken to be serviced by another person, you know, with Mary Kay, it's you try to have customers for life. So it would be like you consulting with, us, and then, or having, you know, a customer, and then they're going to someone else, and you find out in the most odd way. So I guess I was just really curious about effective communication. Like, how do you communicate when those weird, awkward things happen so that you can still
right.
have,
Karina?
Does that make sense?
Karina?
Yes.
Are you sitting down?
Yes, I am.
And I'm saying that because here's the thing. I want you to breathe into what I'm going to tell you, all right? Because I'm going to tell you something that you probably don't want to hear. I'm just being extremely honest. And I want everybody on the phone here to pay attention, because this is extremely important. The phrase that I want you to write down is, if it triggers me, it's about me.
Okay.
If it triggers me, it's about me. So what was the judgment that took place in your mind about the person that did that? What was your judgment about her?
That she's dishonest, I guess?
Is it dishonest?
I don't
right.
know.
No, that's okay. That's fine.
I really don't know. I didn't think of it that way.
Well, you saw it as out of integrity. That's how it's coming across. So dishonest is a fine way to describe it.
Okay.
So here's your tough question. Where in your life have you been dishonest?
Hmm. I suppose the fact that I took, I don't know, in this scenario, I took the liberty to call a consultant, and I maybe shouldn't have done that.
Any scenario where you've been dishonest, not the situation, any scenario in your life.
I don't know.
What's that?
I don't know. I tend to be a very honest person. In fact, very, sometimes too much, I think. People, brutally honest. But I'm sure I've been dishonest sometimes, I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
And it's hard, because here's what happens. What happens is the people that come into our lives mirror back to us qualities about ourselves that we have not accepted. And then we resent them for it. So what I want all of you on this call to really think about, every person in your life is mirroring back you. Because we view the world through the lens of how we see ourselves. So if you didn't see dishonesty, Karina, in you, you wouldn't be triggered about it in someone else. And I know that's deep.
That's a very interesting concept. Yeah,
Let me explain it to you. I'm going to explain to you what's happening in the moment, and then maybe Nancy, you could think of an example. And you can use our own life if you want to, anybody, whoever. here's what happens. And again, everybody, please, this is so important. Please try to get this, because I know it's hard to hear. And I even contemplated, should I go here? I mean, really, should I go here? But I think this is the best thing that I can do for you, Karina, is go here. And I want to tell you that we all do this. So don't feel like you're being called out, okay? Everybody does
mm-hmm.
this. All right? What happens in any given moment? See, what happens is about 2 million bits of information per second come into our brain. All right? Our brain can only handle 140 to 160 bits of information per second. So before thought even happens, Karina, there's a huge filtering process that takes place. Okay? We have something at the base of our brain called the reticular activating system that filters what comes in before we even think, okay? But the filter is based on values, beliefs, and programming about ourselves. So you're viewing the world through the lens of how you view you. So the reason her dishonesty triggered you is because you've been dishonest and you haven't been able to embrace that.
Well, maybe dishonest wasn't so much the word, because I don't see myself as a dishonest person, but I do know that there are times when I've done things without thinking through. It's that impulsivity of just doing.
Sure. We all do it. Take it easy on yourself. We all do that stuff. We all make, a bad choice here and there. What I want you to think about is, where in your life have you been dishonest? Or let's say out of integrity in some way. And realize that what she's doing is that's why that's such a big trigger for you. Do you see that?
I've never thought of it that way, Chris, so it's going to take me a minute to process it.
Yeah,
you have to let me sit on that one.
I'm going to let Nancy give you an example. And again, to everybody in the room, everybody take a deep breath and realize that everybody does this. This is just, it's how our brain functions. If it triggers me, it's about me. If it mm-hmm. triggers me, it's about me.
So here's one of my favorite examples, Karina. To kind of like illustrate that point, if it triggers me, it's about me. If you were called fat, if somebody called you fat, and you had grown up with a weight problem, you'd struggled with your weight and thought of yourself as fat and it really hurt you, that someone calling you fat would be devastating. But if you'd grown up with no body issues, no fat issues, none of that going on, somebody would call you fat and you'd laugh. Like it's almost like ridiculous, So in that instance, you can only get triggered by that word if it's already living inside you. So in this exact example, there could be a consultant who finds out that another consultant, started servicing their customer, and have a consultant shrug her shoulders and go, well, that happens. It's not supposed to, but it happens. It's the way the world works. I can't change it. and kind of just move on with it. The fact that you were so triggered by it and had such an emotional reaction to it, to the point where you were actually, you know, so frustrated you didn't communicate well, means that there's something about that within you that you can't look at, that you can't face. I would use the word lack of integrity rather than dishonest, because I think we have a strong reaction to the word dishonest, and we go, well, that's not me. But I would look yourself at the areas in your business where you're not in integrity. And maybe it's not just not in integrity with yourself.
That's true.
Maybe it's not out of integrity with others. Maybe you're completely honest with others. Maybe it's yourself that you lie to.
That's scary and deep. When you say you're lying to yourself, what types of things, how do you know? How do you go beyond that to kind of really, you know, because everything you all talk about is awareness, and then.
Yeah, so it's now what, right?
Yeah, conscious. No, it's good. And
so the
then
first step is, the first step is, first of all, you know, give true thought to this and weigh this, because if you're totally honest and integrity with yourself, you'll be able to put down on paper in a journal where nobody else has to see it some areas where you've been out of integrity, whether it's with you or whether it's with others or moments, whatever it is. You'll be able to get that on paper. Now, what you then want to do, and it's the opposite of what people think they need to do, what people think they need to do is hide it. They need to run from it. They need to get away from it. I need to suppress it. But what happens when you suppress it, in other words, you suppress this part of yourself that was out of integrity, that's when that part of yourself will manifest in a way that's unhealthy, and it will manifest in a way that's not productive, which is what's happening to you here. It's manifesting in a way where you've become totally triggered, and it's owning you, right?
I find that, maybe it's not just me, but yeah. I had heard that, you know, men were able to compartmentalize a lot more, and that's why the 2% top women in Mary Kay are the ones that can kind of put it in the little boxes. And the folks who are real emotional are the ones who struggle with this business, and that's where I feel like I am. Because,
it's hard, but here's what you want to do. Again, if you fully go through this exercise, this will help break you free. So, and everybody on the phone, listen to this. What you want to do is you want to write down when that's happened. In other words, when has it happened? When have you been slightly out of integrity? I mean, even just a little bit.
And that could be, just FYI, that could have been when you were 10. You want to talk about how deep this is, Karina? You could have been 10 years old and told a lie and gotten in such trouble for it that you buried that part of you, that aspect of you, that the one that was accused of being dishonest. And so it's in you, that punishment or that shame or whatever it is, and so therefore you judge others so harshly. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then what you want to move to, and, you know, this is worthy of a one-on-one call as well, so don't be afraid to set up a call or, you know, send further correspondence to me and Nancy about it as you work through this. But what you want to do next is you want to look at those areas where you were out of integrity and answer the question of how did this quality serve me? In other words, how did it serve me? What lessons can I take from this experience of when I was out of integrity? What are the lessons? What are the gifts it brought for me? What way did I evolve because of this moment of being out of integrity? And you want to embrace it, and you want to move to a point of being grateful for that moment because of the lesson that you took from it. And when you become grateful for that part of yourself that you're currently not embracing, you can no longer be triggered by it. Are you breathing, Karina?
Okay, I'm here. Yep, thank you.
You know, I'm just going to give one more analogy about that. Here's what it is. You know, what it is we have these parts of ourselves that we hide, okay? You know, we have moments where we're out of integrity or whatever it is. Maybe we have a moment when we're selfish, or we have a moment when we're angry, you know, total insecurity, neediness. We have all these qualities we don't embrace about ourselves. And the analogy that I heard that I think is fantastic is if you think about those qualities
as grapefruits, where you're carrying those grapefruits around because they're part of you, but you're hiding them. So imagine carrying around every day 10 grapefruits, but you have to carry them in a way that nobody can see them. How much energy would you spend trying to hide the grapefruits? It's horrible. Think about the amount of energy that you would drain. And that's what happens is we run around with these masks on ourselves because we haven't embraced the totality of who we are. And the thing that's extremely important, and I'm not saying run around and be out of integrity, but I'm saying that if you can learn to take the lesson out of those bad moments that you have, then this thing will lose its grip on you. And, you know, I read once that, you know, divinity, being divine, is not about being perfect. Being divine is about being whole. It's about being complete with who you are. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, God doesn't love us just the good. God loves the whole thing. And that's what we have to do. We have to learn to love the whole thing.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sure that went a lot deeper than you expected it to go. And in a very different tangent than communication.
Oh,
how do I communicate?
We're here.
How do I communicate my judgment to somebody nicely?
And folks, you know, we would really love some comments on this, because I'm sure a lot on the phone right now are having a major brain cluster about what we just shared. So really, just weigh in, you know, talk to us about it. Bring it to us now while we're here. I mean, we'd love to hear what you think about what was just shared.
And for anyone who just joined the call or recently did, to unmute your line, you just hit star 6.
Hi, Chris. This is Patty Davis.
Hi, Patty.
Hi.
I did have a question about this. So relate to what you're talking about. My son, he's 16, and he's kind of lazy about doing his schoolwork, and I get so frustrated with him. But based on what you were just saying, I can see how I've done that in my business.
Right.
So I see the mirroring, and it just really frustrates me that he's not doing his best and putting his best effort into his schoolwork. So how do you, so I'm sure my reaction to it is probably not helpful.
Right.
So how do communicate with him without putting all my guilt and feelings on him?
Yes. The first step is realizing that you're angry at him because you're angry at you.
Yes.
So that's the first thing. Now all of a sudden you realize that he is just mirroring your stuff. So that will put you to a place of deeper understanding, that alone, because the reason it's such a trigger is because of what's going on in you.
Right.
Okay, and then what I would totally suggest is you think about what happens to your behavior when you get focused on the thought he's lazy and not working up to his potential.
Well, I'm sure, well, he gets, okay, I'm sure he feels my disapproval.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets real apologetic. You know, I hate to see that. He's like, I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry. So I know there's something negative.
Right, but I want you to focus on you.
On me, okay.
Yeah, what happens to your behavior towards him when you get stuck in that thought, he's lazy and not working to his potential?
So I get critical.
Right. So that's what you want to focus on. You want to focus on, what would happen if I could no longer think the thought he's lazy and he's undedicated?
And lazy is not the right word, but yeah, okay.
He's not working. You have to let go of that story, because that story is about you.
Right.
So again, so much of this is awareness. So next time you're really triggered and really upset because he's not working to his potential, what's going to happen inside you now is going to be, okay, this is my stuff. How can I support him? How can I bring to him value without being critical and attacking him? And I'm not saying be okay with him lazing around and slouching, but you need to realize that the power of the trigger is based on you, not him.
I need to work on myself.
And when you work on you and when you change you, you give those around you the permission to change as well.
Right.
And oftentimes it happens very naturally.
Okay, thank you. That was very helpful. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay.
This is Kathy Wessel.
Hi.
Hi, I have a question.
Sure.
I think we might have
two. Who is it?
This is Jennifer Townsend.
Okay, Jennifer, and then we'll do, was it Wendy? Wendy Hessel?
Kathy.
Okay, Kathy
Wessel. Kathy Wessel.
Yep. We'll do, well, why don't we take Kathy's question first, and then the other person just hold on, and we'll come right back to you.
Okay, I have two things. One is for Karina that was on here earlier, and just after 16 years, we don't own our customers. It's really hard to get over that, but we don't. And so we have to let them go sometimes. My question is, how do I stop comparing myself to other people? In the business. I mean, I fall into this trap all the time of looking at others around me going and thinking, why can't I go as fast as her? Why can't I get as many things as her? And it kind of stops me in my tracks.
Nancy, you want to take that one?
Yeah, because I don't know what you're talking about at all. I'm joking because I've dealt with the comparing thing pretty much my whole life. My issue is a little bit different than comparing my success to other women. I actually go right for something that's even harder to change, and I compare my physical body to other women. And
I do that.
Oh, okay, that too, right? So, of course, in the world we live in, and I can get, if you get me going, I can get really angry at society and blame it, you know, for the emphasis on women's figures and how many women are scantily dressed, and, you know, you look at reality TV and they're all size 2. I mean, you can really get me going on that topic. The problem is for as long as I tried to resist that, my comparing issues just persisted. That's it. I mean, as you know, I would be resentful. I would throw out Victoria's Secret catalogs. But the problem is you can't hide from that. You can't hide from the fact that women are going to do better, look better, be more successful, you know, whatever those things are. You really have to look at what is it bringing up in you. You have a little bit of feedback. So you have to look at what is it, why is it, like what feelings is it bringing up in you? And for me, it's bringing up a not good enough feeling. That's like the core that's in there. And it's very deep and it's from a very long time ago. But it's the not, I'm not good enough.
That's something you said.
And then Chris wants to add something. So that's been the main thing that I've had to work on. Is that core self-esteem, because it's not about other people. It's never about another woman. It's not even about Chris seeing another woman. It's all about what I'm bringing to it, which is that I'm not good enough. So I've had various ways of handling it. I created a mantra. When I would see a beautiful woman and I thought Chris was going to see her and I would feel bad about that, I would tell myself and it was really funny because my first mantra was, I'm good enough. And then I was like, good enough, please. I am more than good enough. That was my reaction. So I started saying to myself in my head, I am more than enough. I am more than enough. And that would like calm that, you know, fear down or that voice down. So that's my first suggestion is get a mantra, because right now the tape that plays in your head is something along the lines of I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, you know, something like that. And you want to find what the contrary mantra is for that so you can start changing the tape in your head.
And the other piece is directly related to what we just talked about. Remember when I just said you can't see in others what doesn't live in you? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So the same thing holds true for greatness. You wouldn't be able to see greatness in someone else if it wasn't in you. So that thing that you're seeing in her is in you, because if it wasn't, you wouldn't be able to see it. So when you catch yourself looking at somebody and sort of idolizing and going, oh my God, I wish I could be like her, you are, because if you weren't, you wouldn't be able to see that quality. Do you totally get that?
kind of.
Yeah, it's hard to wrap around, isn't it? It's a totally new concept. But again, you can't see in others what's not living in you. You can't see her greatness if you don't already possess it. So I think what Nancy said is great. You know, use your mantras. You know, you want to counteract the voice in your mind. But also remember, you know, even if your mantra ends up being, if I didn't have that quality, I wouldn't be able to see it in her. You know, whatever it is, but that's what you want to do. You want to come up with something to counteract the voice in your head.
So I could say something like, well, I could do that too.
You can.
If that feels inspiring to you. Yep. If that stirs positive emotion for you. One I used in a training that I was in was, well, if they can do it, I can do it too. If they can do it, I can do it too. If they can do it, and I just said that over and over again to get me through some really difficult challenges. I would watch other people, and I would say, well, if they can do it, I can do it. If they can do it, I can do it.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hope that's helpful.
It is.
And I'm going to share just a little quick story just to kind of keep this in mind as well. When we're, you know, in women, we might be more guilty of this than men, but when we're busy comparing ourselves to other women, don't ever forget that there is somebody comparing themselves to you and feeling inferior to you. Now, I would have never believed that, but I was in the grocery store one day, and I was looking at this woman who had a beautiful body. She had jeans and a T-shirt on, and she had just a really nice figure. I was so envious of her. And I walk out of the grocery store, and I'm standing there waiting for Chris to pull up the car. And, of course, thinking, gosh, I hope he doesn't see her. Like, how am I going to prevent that, you know, with the world we live in? And all of a sudden, she comes up from behind me outside and says, I have to tell you something. You have the most beautiful legs I think I've ever seen. Your legs have no veins in them. They're perfectly tan, you know. And I'm sitting there with my jaw on the floor. Like, are you kidding? She's like, she goes, my legs are so bad I won't even wear shorts. And here I was looking at her in her jeans thinking, she looks so good. And I had to have that experience to wake me up and say, here I am so envious of other women, but who's out there envying?
Sorry.
That's okay. So just keep that in mind that we all do it, and it's unfortunate, but somebody envies you too. Okay. So let's who was the next person that we were taking? We took Kathy, or we took Wendy?
Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. The question that I have is about writing the mission statement and how it's supposed to make sense of your suffering.
Okay.
Can you expand on the suffering part for me, please?
Sure. Absolutely. So basically, it goes along with that other saying that we said on the mission call, make your mess your message. So most people go through some messes in their life, and, you know, from everything from, you know, I didn't get a doll I wanted when I was 5 to, you know, I was, you know, sexually abused and very traumatic, you know, types of things. But everybody has gone through something. That's just the nature, unfortunately, of going through the stages of childhood. So there's usually a point where something's happened to us, and as a child, we make a decision about it. You know, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong with me. That doesn't seem right. I don't feel like I'm loved, you know. It can also happen when you're older. You could go through something like, you know, a bout with cancer or be diagnosed with an MS or something like that. So any of those experiences that cause suffering or trauma or even just bad feelings, if you've learned from that, then you have a gift to give back to the world. Without a mission, without your life meaning something, and without you having some understanding of where suffering comes from, then the suffering's pointless. And it just seems like a cruel trick, you know, that God put on us to put us here and then have us go through some pretty devastating experiences. The reason your suffering makes sense of, or your mission makes sense of your suffering, is because your mission says, take that suffering, learn the lessons there are to learn from it, and then turn that around and teach others to help them not go through the same thing, or maybe go through it, but go through it faster and recover. Does that make sense?
I think so. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You know, just to use our business as an example, I mean, the first, we ended up being known for traveling around and doing a training that helps consultants get over fear of sales calls. And, you know, that mess in my life, you know, when I first started selling in the field, doing face-to-face sales, I became totally call reluctant, and it almost cost me my career. So that was my mess. And, you know, we ended up going ahead and turning that into a message. So that's just a little example.
When I was able to ask more questions, I guess there's a two-part question. One, I'm in awe of everyone who has such wonderful question-asking skills because it's something that I strive for, but I get stuck a lot. But anyway, when I feel like I'm asking profound questions and they're responding in this circumstance, I said exactly what you said, Chris. I said, well, if nothing told me back but here, I said, do it anyway. We had gone through several conversations. It was about the second or third. A very security-based girl, family-oriented woman. So I knew it would be a couple of dialogues. But at this point, she said, if I taught her everything and she knew that nothing would hold her back, if she had nothing to fear, or she knew that nothing would hold her back from failing, or I don't know how to say it, but if she wouldn't fail, could she do it? She said, yes. And yet she didn't have the money. At that point, do you just move on?
Actually, when somebody tells me they don't have the money, I usually say, is it that you don't have any money at all, like nothing in savings, nothing in reserves, or is it that you don't have any money for this?
That's right. I do remember you saying that. I didn't remember at the moment. Obviously, I should have thought about that.
Oh, I respond, and you want to respond with warmth, with caring, and with understanding when you make that statement. Because sometimes the person will say, it's that I don't have any money for this. And if they say, I don't have any money for this, that's a totally different objection than I just don't have the money.
Yeah,
so
she actually said, sorry to interrupt you, Chris, she did have to look at her account. She said, I'm going to pay you tomorrow. It's not that she wasn't going to have money, but she had all this mess around her life. And then I started to think, do we really recruit people who have so much drama in their lives because we're offering it to everyone? We don't want to be suggestive, but we're also hand-selecting the women in our lives to work with. And I just wonder, you've been in sales for so many years, Chris. When you find someone who has that great potential, but life is in the way, do you continue to support them through making that decision? Because she probably would have had the money, but all this other, you know, like life just kind of sat on her. And I thought, you know, it's right. When you want to do something great, the devil gets in the way. And all kinds of
Well, for me, it really depends. I mean, and you can only do so much, Karina. I mean, that's my take on it. Sometimes you do everything right and people still say no. I mean, that's the bottom line. So sometimes what I usually try to do, and, you know, we'll cover this when we go over the recruiting conversation, the interview process, I try to get the person to see that typically what they do in their decisions is they use the same thinking that has them stuck in their life. You know, when are you going to have the time? When are you going to have the money? That whole kind of thing. And again, it's too long in order to sort of get into it here, but again, it'll be coming on a future call. We can dialogue on that a little bit too if you want, Karina. Just send me an email and I can share that with you. But again, what I usually try to do is I try to get them to see how the current way that they're thinking is one of the little pieces of what might be having them stuck. And if you can get them to entertain that, it can be a pretty profound insight for them.
Okay, great.
Okay, so we have received a couple emails, questions by email, so I just want to make sure that we address those. Again, Chris and I will stay on the phone as long as you have questions, so don't worry that we're going to, you know, end right at 9 o'clock. But I did promise people we would answer email questions. So one question we got by email was,
and this is, I'll just read it right from here because it was nice and short. It said, I always struggle with levels of inventory to suggest new consultants start with. I want to do what is best for them and their family, but after 20 years in this business, if they don't have adequate inventory, they don't have a commitment. There is so much fear of debt. Do you have any suggestions? So this is a question that comes up quite often. So Chris and I have kind of like a two-part answer for this. The first thing that came to my mind was something that we see that's very common is that the way you were recruited into the business is very often, and of course we're talking about projection again, very often what you project or even predict for other people. So if it took you months and months and months to make the decision to become, you know, to come into the business, then you have this in your head that it's going to take other people months and months and months to make the decision to come into the business. If you came and ordered a big, large inventory, but then you didn't sell it and you lost money, you're going to project or predict that that's going to happen for others as well, and you may be very hesitant to encourage them to start with a large inventory order. So, you know, what you say right here in this email question is, in your experience, if people don't come in with an adequate inventory, you've experienced that they aren't really committed. So I'm going to have Chris take the second part of that, but that's a key sentence in your email.
And I always tell people to speak from your heart on it. You know, take yourself out of the picture as much as possible and just speak from your heart and share the pros and cons, because if they're thinking of coming in at 600, you know the cons of coming in at 600. So just lay it out and speak from your heart, because certainly you're there to be of service. And remember, when you're coaching them through this conversation and you're helping them see the reality of why they need to come in at 1600 or, you know, or 1800 rather than 600, you're actually doing a service for them. And if you can stay in that energy that this is service, this is good advice, and if that's in your belief that it's good advice, that will come through when you're having the conversation. So simply get into your heart, try to take yourself out of the picture, lay out the pros and cons of both.
Okay. Before I go over the next email question, I just want to give everyone on the call an opportunity to ask a question. So if you have a question, go ahead and hit star 6. Is
Nancy?
Anyone? Yes?
It's Kathy Wessel again.
Hi, Kathy. How you doing?
I'm good. I have another question, if it's okay.
Yeah, no problem. Go ahead.
Okay, so I live in an economically depressed area of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the story that I tell myself when I make calls to new leads is they're not going to have the money anyway. Why bother? And because my average on call-in leads is 1 out of 10 books instead of 1 out of 5.
Okay.
And so it gets kind of depressing.
Mm-hmm.
Make many calls before I get a booking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm glad, number one, that you recognize that it's a story that you tell yourself, right? Because right away you said that the story that I tell myself is.
Yes.
What I would do, and number one, I would look around your town, and I would look at the restaurants on a Monday night. Are they full on a Monday night?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, no. Okay. Are they full on a Wednesday night?
Yes.
Okay. So basically that means, in my opinion, Wednesday through Sunday, people are out eating in your town, spending money on meals when they could be home, you know, making their own dinner. So economically depressed or not, people are still spending money. And so we have to be really careful to buy into the story that just because of the economy or a depressed part of the country that we live in, that people aren't spending money on the things that are important to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so I need to get over that story.
Yep.
And make Mary Kay important to them?
Well, you're really close on track. So number one, the first thing is get over the story. Take a look around. If you have a Starbucks in your town, Those are $4 lattes. You know what I mean? When people could be having a dollar cup of coffee, they're spending $4 on lattes. So you really have to get past that story that you're telling, that people don't have the money. The second thing, you are absolutely right on. If you're in an interview or a recruiting conversation, you have to make Mary Kay important to them. And the only way to do that is to find out what is important to them. It's not about presenting all the amazing things about Mary Kay and how wonderful the opportunity is, because you know that they can't possibly get it right now. It is very important to find out, where is that person's motivation to do Mary Kay? What is the pain in their life? And if it's an economically depressed part of the country, the pain is probably that they don't have enough money. And then you show them how Mary Kay could actually bring money to them. But you have to find out that that's their pain first. And that's their motivation first and foremost. And then remember, even if your ratio is 1 to 10, Chris used to work in a sales job where his close ratio was, what, 1 in 150?
1 in 50.
1 in 50 was Chris's closing ratio. So no matter what your closing ratio is, it's still a numbers game. So even if you know, and here's the thing, we're going to give you some great information on a call about how to improve your recruiting effectiveness. But even if you didn't improve that number, which I think you will be able to do, but even if you couldn't, it just means you need to double the number of people you're calling.
And you know what it really comes down to at the end of the day? It comes down to how bad do you want it? I mean, that's, and I say that from having that experience of realizing that in order for me to get to the goal that I needed to hit in order to get promoted into outside sales, I actually had to make 200 dials. And I was one of the only people out of an office of over 100 people that was making 200 dials a day. And it was because I wanted it that bad. So I wish I had a magic wand to say, hey, this is going to be easy. You know, it is. You really have to want it.
Thank you.
Does that help? And I would really encourage you to make sure that you're on the call. And, of course, we, you know, give you the topic ahead of time. Make sure you're on the call, effective interviews. Because what we do is Chris goes through a formula, like a six-step process of how to guide the recruiting conversation so that at the end, the possibility of you getting the money objection is greatly reduced. And it's all about, like you said, how do I make them want it? It's them realizing they need it. Okay. Does anyone else have a question? Just go ahead and hit star six. If not, I'm going to take this email question. Yeah.
Hi, this is Patty Davis again.
Hi, Patty.
Hi. So do you think it's effective to use text messaging instead of, not to replace all calls, but to supplement calls, or is that kind of a cop-out?
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing. It can be a cop-out, just like email can be a cop-out. What we encourage is using all modes to reach people.
Okay.
If you have a younger clientele, younger group of customers, you know, you can call them and leave them a voicemail, but they're only going to respond to you if you text them. So I think you should be using it all. And we also actually do a call on that later in the program on, you know, how to use Facebook and email and texting and phone calls and postcards or something in the mail, because you want to touch people every way possible. Because if all you ever do is email people, they get immune to that. They, you know, they're so used to seeing your name in their inbox, they don't pay attention to it anymore. So I think, yes, texting could be a crutch. You know, if you're unwilling to pick up the phone and make a call, it probably is a crutch. But if you're willing to pick up the phone and make the calls, then it's probably a good supplement.
Okay, great. Thank
you.
I
would definitely use it to confirm facials and parties. Absolutely.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay. So I'm going to take this email question because I just don't want to leave out the people that did email. So the question was that they were on the call Tuesday night. They loved it. That's the good news. And she says, is for my stack of leads from over a year ago, I'm so embarrassed, but I haven't called them. I haven't given myself the permission to call. So any suggestions or direction on that? Not sure how I can turn it to my advantage to still offer them my services, or should I just purge them and, or purge and move on? So all I want to say to this person is, you know, you're not the only one. We hear from so many people who have stacks of leads from over a year.
How would we know you have a stack of leads if everybody's not doing
it? Right, right. So we have, you know, we've heard the stories, a year, 2 years, whatever. So let's see. It says a year old. Are they a year old? Yeah, from over a year ago. So we would mostly consider those dead leads, quite frankly. You know, if it's been a couple months and you were at a bridal fair or something like that and you want to say, hey, you know, I'm so sorry I didn't call when I got your information a couple months ago. But over a year, it's going to be hard to kind of backtrack to where it is you met them or where you got them from. Every once in a while we'll tell someone, go ahead and give them one phone call. You know, if you've got 100 cards and you take, how long would that take, 15 minutes, and you just dial each one. If you get somebody on the phone and get, you know, one person on the phone or a couple, then maybe it wasn't such a waste. But your time would probably be better spent getting new leads than calling leads that are a year old. Anything to add?
I pretty much agree. I mean, yeah. I mean, because that length of time makes it really, really tough. And the other thing is if you're not making that many calls right now, and then you break back into making calls, and you're using that as your leads that you're calling, the success rate of leads that are that age is not going to be very good, and that can run the risk of sort of sidelining you and then overgeneralizing, and overgeneralizing saying that this is how it's always going to be when I make calls, when that's really not true if you're calling leads that are fresh.
Right. Okay. So that's it for our email questions. Does anybody else have a question on the phone? Just go ahead and hit star six.
Hey, Nancy, this is Ann Body.
Hi, Ann. How you doing?
I'm great.
Excellent.
I'm actually picking
really,
up.
I really believed that.
Yeah. I'm picking up my first car tomorrow. Yay! My question is, I just can't get a good feel for my purpose.
Okay.
No, I did what I'd like people to say at my funeral and, you know, just thinking, but I just can't, you know, nothing really says, yeah, that's it. Does that just come later after you sort of rehearsed it over and over and over again?
Well, you know what? That's why we always say that finding your mission or discovering your mission is a process. Not that you have to share it with me, but were you able to identify any messes in your life or any suffering in your life that you went through and that you feel compelled, it's not about force-fitting, but feel compelled to help others. Now, I'm going to leave that part out because sometimes we don't feel compelled to help others, you know, through it. Have you identified any messes or suffering in your life that you went through that you've learned something from? Could be personal, could be in your business, your marriage, any of those things.
Well, the number one thing that was something that hopefully nobody else will go through, but people do all the time, is the loss of my son.
Okay. And how old was he when you lost him?
22,
okay. Now, that is a huge traumatic suffering, right?
Right.
yeah. That's just one of those things that you're never supposed to have to deal with is the loss of a child.
Right.
So you learned some really valuable lessons through that process,
right.
I'm assuming. You either had to rely on your faith or you had to get stronger or, you know, for you to be in a good place now, you've had to do some pretty intense work would be my guess.
Right, and God is good.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So you have a message there. And maybe the message, you know, here's how a mission can take form. The message could be as aligned with the loss of your son as I'm going to go and start a nonprofit, organization to help parents deal with the loss of older children. Because maybe there's
I don't know, it'd be anything, really.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it could be that level of specificity.
Right.
Okay. Or it could take the you know, path of I'm going to let me think. I had another example before you said that. I'm going to go, and here's the thing. I don't know how your son passed away, but say there was a certain illness or he was in an accident with a drunk driver. It could take those forms. I'm going to go work to eliminate drunk driving. I'm going to go eliminate or work toward the, you know, solution to this disease that took him. Whatever the circumstances surrounding it are, it could lead you in that direction. Maybe your response would be, as a mother, so attached to my son, I know exactly how hard it was for me to deal with that. I'm going to go help other women be stronger as mothers. You know what I mean? Be more individuals as mothers so that when something like this, if it could happen, they're strong and they're independent and, you know, et cetera. So what you've gone through can take all kinds of forms. How you express it is completely up to you. And this is just examples. I'm just kind of giving you examples. It doesn't mean this is definitely the thing. But, you know, to me that's a pretty traumatic thing that you went through and you survived.
Yes. Yes,
okay.
I have survived. Like I said, thank the good Lord.
And usually, here's something that usually our mission we're drawn to talk about it, or we're drawn to help others that are in this situation. Now, that's usually how it happens, okay? So if I went through something, you know, a cancer, let's say, and then I'm compelled to help others with it. But sometimes what our suffering was or our pain was so painful, it's so deeply buried that it doesn't occur to us to make that our mission and help others with it. So sometimes what people have gone through is so shameful for them, like they're
uh-huh.
so embarrassed by it, that the last thing in the world they want to do is talk about it and open up to people about it. But that is truly where their greatest healing will take place. And so it can
be
one of those two things. Either you went through it, you know you went through it, you're drawn to people that are going through it because you know you can help them, you have a message to give them, or it can be something that is so deeply buried because of, you know, how hard it was that you went through, you can't even imagine talking about it. Either one of those can point you to your mission.
Right. Now, I don't have any trouble talking about it. But I guess, you know, well, you know, just relying on the good Lord. That's just, you know, taking one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. Is that the greatest lesson you learned from the loss of your son?
I needed to rely on the good Lord before, but you know, just that, you know, God will help you through whatever you're going through.
Right.
And, you know, he's not going to leave us. He's going to stay right there with us and help us. And it may not be an overnight thing. It may take time to get over it, but that's okay. He's still with us.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be, it's like he said in Psalms 23, you walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Everything's through something. It's not into something.
Right. And that's a great message.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, hey, you're welcome. Okay, does anyone else have any questions? Just go ahead and hit *6.
Nancy, if you have part of this mission that you understand, like for me, when I began this business, I was just really... I did it without even thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what Mary Kay was about.
Right.
And now I've had to develop the story to share with others as to why I stay. But when I look inside my heart and my mission, part of it I know is to inspire, but then sometimes I wonder, is it really through the vehicle of Mary Kay? because when I would think about what I did as a child, when I would think about the things that I was good at, it was just so hard to even come to realize that Mary Kay would really be the vehicle for that. So because this coaching is really only because of Mary Kay, I know there's got to be like a deeper piece to it. But in what you had shared in your last training about how it could take a while, I keep thinking there's got to be more that I'm missing that I don't understand how to delve deep down into. But, I mean, sometimes I think I know what I want to do, but I don't know if I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I inspire, but to what extent am I changing lives the way I really want to?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So the question I would ask is, if you were fully, you know, participating or committed to your Mary Kay business and you were moving to the level that you want, let's say, you know, you want to be a whatever level director, would you at that point be able to inspire women to the level that you want?
Yes, I think so.
Is that like a vision that you see?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I saw that vision, but not recently. I mean, I saw that before. Like, I was at seminar, and every time I was in the space of nationals, I said, that's what I want, from others to be able to hear what I have to say, to share and change that consultant's life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's the vision to hold on to, is that maybe in the current, you know, structure of your business, you're not spending as much time inspiring women as you would like. But once you have a team and you're a director and you're now teaching and sharing and leading meetings, that is now your opportunity to inspire them with your message. So there are women in Mary Kay that have all kinds of missions, but Mary Kay is very much the vehicle for them to fulfill that mission.
So the message part is the part that I have to dig deep down to figure out what
right.
I have to do.
And here's what I would do. I would do this exercise. I would visualize yourself as a national. You're given the stage at seminar, and all corporate asks you to do is deliver the message that you most want to deliver to the audience. What would your message be? That's what you should write. Okay. Did that help?
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
Okay. I'll believe you.
Yeah, I was just thinking if I'm almost in tears, it did.
That's a good thing.
That's right. If you can cry about it, you can sell it.
Yeah. Well, emotion is a beautiful thing when you're talking about your mission. It should be emotional. So that's great.
Do you, a director had shared writing a 3D vision. I don't know if this is what you describe as a 3D vision, but I did steer away from doing this, and I think it's because I didn't really want to know what I wanted to say. But do you then suggest that you read this and say it out loud, or how do you keep it present so that you know why you're working every day?
Yeah, I would read it every day. Because the thing with pictures is we post up a picture of a national director, you know, suit, and we stop seeing it. You know what I mean? Like we just
see, you don't see it.
Something's
yeah.
in our environment every day, day in, day out. We just stop seeing it. So you actually have to, in some way, represence it. So reading would be helpful because that's more interactive. Chris and I... We created these things called mind movies, where to a PowerPoint presentation with music and words and images, we would watch our mind movie, so it was like visual and auditory, and it was actually more emotional because we'd pick really great music, like a more emotional experience. So anything that you can do to represent that vision every day, I mean, the vast majority of people can't do it as long as it takes 30 days. To really ingrain a vision in our subconscious brain. And most people never get past, like, day two or three.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely do that.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Okay, well, if anybody else has a question, just go ahead and hit star six.
Nancy?
Yes?
This is Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
And I wrote about the leads.
Uh-huh. I wasn't going to call you out.
I know you are, and I appreciate that because that's, you know, whatever. And I can feel for, you know, having the right questions because I struggled with, okay, now we're going to have a Q&A, but I don't have any questions. I just need to get to work. And so my question so much about the leads was I don't want to continue to attach guilt to them. So I guess I wanted permission to either pitch them or
mm-hmm.
make me have to call them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where, you know, that was from, that, you know, I'm tired of just either looking at them or going, you know, what is my deal with these things? So I appreciate that there was two good things that, you know, I'm okay right now to purge them if I need to purge them because they're way too old. And to also, you know, if I feel like I want to make some phone calls, I can, but I don't have to base my whole lead follow-up
right.
story in my mind with these old cold leads.
Right, exactly.
So. Yeah.
And I would say,
that.
You know, here's the thing. It's one of those, we don't want you holding on to them because they represent hope. You know, sometimes we hold on to old leads because they look, they look like hope rather than no leads, which looks hopeless. I would rather have you have a clean sweep and stop hanging on to the hope of them and have you feel purged and go out and get new leads.
Right. Well, and I wasn't even so much looking.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if hanging on to them has you still in the same energy of, oh, guilt, and why am I still looking at these, and, you know, if there's so much negativity around it, get rid of them. Just throw them out. We give you permission.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I didn't, again, I kind of looked at them as though not so much they were hope, though I have done that in the past, but so much as I'm no good at following up on leads, so I might as well, you know, I might as well not get any new ones, because I haven't been good at following up on these. So that's where I was kind of stopping myself once again, now that I'm ready for this new growth,
mm-hmm.
is to sit on these leads going, well, now you just got to keep beating yourself up about it. So I just so appreciate getting the permission, because I'm like,
yeah.
I'm going to burn them right now. Wait till the call's over. Wait till the call's
yeah,
over.
Exactly. Well, I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where we can always change. And change
right.
isn't easy, but you know, you saying I never follow up on leads, so why bother going getting new ones? I say, well, I used to eat so badly that, you know, I used to weigh 45 pounds more than I do right now, you know. But I changed.
Right.
I changed my behavior and changed my result. And guess what I did? I went in my closet. I purged every single item of clothing that was a size bigger than what I am right now.
Right.
So I did
and I've done that with... Yeah, I've done that with other things,
yep.
but I just kept looking at these leads going, oh.
Yeah,
I just don't
if they've
wanna...
been like some sort of crutch for you, you just want to get rid of them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next question.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, this is Laura.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Nancy. I have a question about my why.
Okay.
And exactly what it is. I had an experience when I was with my father, and I thought that was my why, and I really want to know if my why was the experience of finding out that I was abused all my life, and I realized it was sort of like a relief
mm-hmm.
that I'm not in a trash can anymore
mm-hmm.
because I thought it was I was always put in a trash can because of my epilepsy and put down about that all the time. But I found out that my father and mother were always abusing me all my life and putting me down for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, feel altogether different. It was after the call that we had on the 6th because I was at my father's taking care of him. He has Parkinson's. And it's just a sort of relief. But I really want to know, what is the why? Is
mm-hmm.
it? Is it finding out that or not? Because it was a very emotional time for me.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. Well, I think how that ties into your why is you yes, it was horrible what you went through, but you survived it. And in order for you to be even a functional adult after that type of abuse, you've had to learn some pretty important things. You've had to, change some inner stories that you might have had about yourself. You've had to stop letting people mistreat you. And those are really valuable lessons that you can pass on to others.
Okay.
Okay,
well then, what exactly am I looking for with the why in this?
Well, what do you think the greatest lesson is that you've learned from what you went through?
Well, I've learned that I don't want to be in the trash can anymore, and I feel like I can stand up and go ahead and stick up for other people, and I can forgive a lot for what has been done to me.
Okay. So I heard two things that I think are great messages. Sticking up for yourself, right?
Yes.
First and foremost, before you stick up for others, stick up for yourself. And two, forgiveness.
Yes, definitely.
Forgiveness is huge. It's a huge message for the world because so many people go through bad experiences and come out so bitter and so angry that even though the abuse has stopped, their life never gets better. And they waste the rest of their life almost like in a tribute to the abuse that happened. So forgiveness, if that's been huge for you, powerful, a great, lesson that you've learned, maybe that's what you're here to teach.
Well, whatever. I've been through an awful lot.
Yeah. Well, there's something you're here to teach. That's for sure with what you've gone through. Definitely here. There's a message that you need to pass on.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, any other questions? Go ahead and hit star 6. Anyone there? Anyone else? I'm sure there's people there, but... Okay. Well, you guys did really good. We went past the hour by like 25 minutes, so that was great that you had so many questions. Chris and I were happy that we could help you out and get a chance to interact and chat with you. So tune in. The next call is going to be in not this coming Tuesday, but the following Tuesday. And Chris and I will be doing it from, I think we're going to be in Phoenix, Arizona. Yep,
and folks, we didn't weigh in on the time for the calls, so... Just send us your email to let us know whether you prefer 8 o'clock Eastern or 9 o'clock Eastern.
How about this? How about if you want, I'm just trying to cut down on the number of emails that Renee will receive.
Okay.
If you want it changed, want the calls changed to 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, then go ahead and email us and just let us know that. And we know the number of the people in the program, and we'll try and make a decision based on that. So if you prefer 9, if that makes it easier for you to make the calls, then please just let us know. Okay, everyone have a wonderful night. We're so glad to have gotten a chance to interact with you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Good night.